You're listening to The Takeaway with John Hockenberry and Adora Udoji.
Good morning. It's Thursday, August 28th, and today a federal jury continues to deliberate the precedent-setting case against former Marine Jose Nazario Jr. in Riverside, California. It is the very first time a civilian federal court is considering charges against a former military man related to his time in service. That's because of a 2002 law that opened the door to prosecutions of not only military contractors, but also ex-military members. And for the story now, we go to Steve Cuevas, a reporter for Southern California Public Radio at KPCC. Good morning, Steve.
Good morning.
So explain this case against Mr. Nazario.
Well, as you said, this case is being heard in a civilian court because Jose Nazario left the Marine Corps in 2005. He's alleged to have killed two Iraqi detainees in 2004 in Fallujah, during the Battle of Fallujah, and then ordered two of his squad mates to kill two other detainees. And again, it's being heard in a civilian court because Nazario, because he's been out so long, cannot be tried in a military court.
And it is a relatively new law, but tell us how this case even came to pass.
Well, right. I mean, the alleged crime occurred in 2004. It came to light during a job interview that one of Nazario's squad mates, Ryan Weimer, a sergeant, had with the Secret Service in 2007. He was undergoing a lie detector test, and the person administering that test asked him if he had ever killed anyone, and that's when this case, or rather this incident in Fallujah, came up, and he talked in, you know, pretty significant detail about what allegedly happened that day. And this person from the Secret Service brought this information to military investigators. You know, and that sort of led to where we are today.
And this is many years later for an alleged incident that took place in Iraq, where an investigation did not take place following it. What kind of evidence, then, do prosecutors actually have? What have they given the jury to deliberate about?
Well, see, that's the thing. There is no forensic evidence to speak of. No bodies were ever recovered. There are no identities to attach to these alleged victims, and there's no other sort of hard evidence. What the U.S. Attorney's Office was really relying on was the testimony of the other two Marines who allegedly took part in this killing. Earlier this week, they refused to testify and were slapped with contempt and could be jailed later next month. So right now, really, all the jury has to go on is the more secondhand kind of eyewitness account of two other squad members who did not actually witness these alleged killings, but heard gunshots, saw the bodies, and also saw two of the detainees before they were allegedly killed.
So no bodies, no names of these alleged victims, no forensic at all, no pictures, no video, no nothing.
Mm-mm. Mm-hmm. Right, and I think it's quite a big mountain to scale for the prosecution. We'll see. You know, traditionally in this area of Southern California, which tends to be a little more conservative, it's very pro-military, it's very pro-police. It'll be hard to see. Many military law experts I've spoken to, you know, don't give the U.S. Attorney's Office much of a chance in this case. However, they feel very strongly that this law should stay on the books, and that it be possible that you can bring former military members to justice 2, 3, 4, 10 years after their time is through in the military.
And what reasons do they give supporting this? It was a 2002 law, right?
2000, and it was revised in 2004 to prosecute civilian contractors who commit crimes abroad and also former military. You know, they're supportive of it because they feel there's no other way to administer justice to these members of the military, because once you are no longer considered quote-unquote active duty or on reserve status, you're kind of untouchable for whatever alleged crimes you may have committed on the battlefield, in the theater of war, in other countries.
Well, so Stephen, quickly, it sounds like you're saying that the U.S. attorneys with such a weak case are just really trying to send a message to other off-duty discharged military personnel that their careers are actually open to scrutiny because of this law. And I guess I presume that would also be the motivation for the military and Secret Service people to give the evidence to the U.S. attorneys in the first place.
I think that could be part of it, and I think that could be one of the motivating factors that really pushed them to go ahead and hear this case, because obviously when they were preparing the case, they knew exactly what they had, what the weaknesses were, and probably figured themselves that it was a pretty big hurdle they had in front of them. So I think that's very possible. Of course, they're not talking. Hopefully, after a verdict, we'll learn a little bit more about what their motivations were.
Stephen, before you go, what is Nazario's defense, and did he testify?
He did not testify. He has not spoken to the facts of the case at all. He has given some interviews. He spoke most recently with the Associated Press, but did not talk at all about the facts of the case, other than to say that he supports the job that his men did there and stands by the overall actions that they had to take in Fallujah and elsewhere during this war.
Did his defense stand up and put anything into evidence, or did they just rest after the prosecution put forth their case?
They just rested. They called no witnesses, and had no other evidence to present. All they did was
okay.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks very much, Stephen Cuevas, reporter for KPCC, Southern California Public Radio. Now we turn to Femi Oke for the latest headlines.
Thank you very much, Adore. It is coming up to 20 minutes to the top of the hour.